Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. Today we have some good news for utility ratepayers from the Public Utilities Commission. A crackdown by El Cajon police on people feeding the homeless in a public park has made international news and drawn threats of a lawsuit. On our Capitol report, hear about the Trump administration considering arrests of leaders in sanctuary cities and states. And then from Public News Service, hear about a proposed federal rule that could reduce tips for restaurant workers. There's a high surf advisory for this weekend here, plus help for lilac fire survivors now available from FEMA. On Green Scene, hear about inner-city children planting trees in a mountain preserve locally through the Give a Tree program. Then learn why National Park Advisory members have resigned in protest. We'll take you on the road to Ramona, where a new mural of Mount Woodson will soon be unveiled. Learn about San Diego State's new engineering and science complex, and hear how you can nominate a healthcare hero. On Vines and Wines, learn about the wine industry's potent economic punch for our economy. On Destination East County, we'll tell you about amazing events coming up across East County, from jazz and country music concerts to author book signings and a healthy living expo in Santee where you can run a one-of-a-kind obstacle course. Today, we'll replay two of our Best of East County episodes, a bookshelf interview with Ramona mystery novelist Joyce Strand, and tips from Connie Beck on how to attract butterflies and hummingbirds to your garden. So stay tuned for all of these stories on the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters.
Ratepayer relief appears to be on the horizon. The California Public Utilities Commission has ordered gas and electric companies to calculate how much money they will save under the new federal tax law and pass those savings along to ratepayers, not shareholders. That's welcome news for ratepayers in San Diego, where utility rates have been ranked the highest in the nation in the recent past. The Public Utility Commission's action came in response to a letter sent by State Senator Jerry Hill, a San Mateo Democrat. He asked the regulatory agency to find out how much utilities will save under the new tax cuts, and asked that customers' monthly bills be lowered accordingly. Terry Prosper, spokesperson for the commission, confirmed in an email to Senator Hill that at the CPUC's direction, all of the electric and gas utilities in California are tracking the savings from the tax law changes and will be required to refund the savings to their customers. It's unclear just how much your utility bill will be going down. The tax bill slashes corporate rates anywhere from 21% to 35%. But some utilities paid far less with various deductions. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Fistier.
The sighting of a dozen activists in El Cajon for defying the city's ban on feeding homeless people in public parks over Martin Luther King's Jr. birthday weekend has made worldwide news. Headline stories have been reported in the BBC, Britain's Guardian newspaper, MSNBC, and other major media outlets around the world. A national petition on the Care 2 site titled Let People Feed the Homeless calls on El Cajon to end the ban. It has been signed by over 37,000 people. On Monday, the city has issued a statement standing behind its actions as appropriate to prevent the spread of hepatitis A during a countywide health emergency. The American Civil Liberties Union issued a statement condemning the arrest as unconstitutional and cruel. Protesters also held a press conference denouncing the ban. The city's statement contends that the ordinance is necessary to protect the public's health and was meant to be temporary until the county lifts its emergency declaration. The city claims it worked closely with community groups that have historically fed homeless individuals in the park and claims these groups were in support of the ordinance passed last October. El Cajon says it has taken strides to inform the public of over a dozen locations where food is served and distributed. It also has published a list of restaurants that honor food stamps for eligible homeless individuals. The city says substantial warnings were provided for several weeks before enforcement of the ban, adding, "The city encourages those that wish to feed homeless individuals to work with existing community groups." The ACLU, in a letter sent to the city attorney before the arrest, objected to the ban on constitutional grounds. After the arrest, the civil rights group issued a statement that read, "In keeping with the principles of the U.S. Constitution that the ACLU defends every day, and also the enduring human values we celebrate on Martin Luther King's Jr. Day, we once again urge the city of El Cajon to rescind the ban on sharing food with people experiencing hunger and homelessness. Further, we urge the city to drop charges against the 9 arrested for their expression of charity." Activists on Monday, including some arrested, held a Break the Ban press conference. They announced plans to ask a court to dismiss criminal charges on constitutional grounds and file a civil lawsuit against the city. Similar suits have been filed elsewhere. In Fort Lauderdale, Florida, a court struck down the city's ban on feeding homeless in public places as unconstitutional in 2014. Arnold Abbott, a 90-year-old World War II veteran arrested for violating the ban, has resumed feeding the homeless, and the city agreed in mediation to suspend its ban rather than appeal. In Houston, Texas, a man filed suit in November claiming a similar ban infringed on his religious beliefs to feed the homeless on Thanksgiving. Cities that impose such bans have argued that their intent is to protect public health, but the website Legal Match notes the opponents contend the trend is a part of an effort to criminalize homelessness with bans on panhandling, sleeping on public streets, or even in vehicles, all measures that have faced legal court challenges or are currently awaiting hearings in the legal system. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ Radio, this is Paul Cruz.
This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital.
This is Meridian Broaddus with the Capitol Report. Leaders of sanctuary cities and states might soon be arrested and charged with federal crimes. Christian Nielsen, Secretary of Homeland Security, told senators in a committee meeting Tuesday. Secretary Nielsen indicated that the Justice Department is considering charging officials who implement or enforce laws and policies that prohibit jurisdictions from cooperating with immigration authorities. Earlier this month, Thomas Homan, the acting director of Immigration and Customs Enforcement, also called for local and state elected officials to be charged with federal crimes for following sanctuary policies aimed at shielding undocumented immigrants. It is unclear precisely how sanctuary cities or states would be defined, and jurisdictions' policies vary widely, nor is it clear how widely a dragnet could be cast. If California is targeted, could the governor, department heads, or even state legislators who voted for sanctuary bills be imprisoned? What about University of California officials, local school districts, or mayors of some local cities? But some experts say arresting state and local officials in sanctuary jurisdictions would itself be illegal. Cecilia Wang, Deputy Legal Director for the American Civil Liberties Union, called the Trump administration announcements troubling intimidation tactics. In an interview with Newsweek, the ACLU attorney said that threatening to prosecute officials who have spoken out against the administration's harsh immigration enforcement policies pose a serious First Amendment problem. She added, "The Constitution doesn't let the federal government force state and local officials to do the president's bidding in this way." Some other Trump administration actions to punish sanctuary jurisdictions have already faced legal challenges. A federal judge late last year blocked an executive order by President Donald Trump that would have stripped sanctuary cities and states of funding. California Senator Kamala Harris questioned the Homeland Security Secretary in the Senate hearing on the agency's operations. Later, her press secretary issued a statement indicating that Senator Harris is deeply disturbed to hear that this administration is actively looking for ways to prosecute California elected officials who have passed laws to protect public safety and combat the damaging effects of this administration's immigration enforcement policies.
As women's marches take place across the country this Saturday, time is running out to put in your two cents about a rule proposed by the Trump administration that a new report says could cost female workers $4.6 billion in tips a year. The Department of Labor wants to rescind Obama-era rules that barred employers from seizing their workers' tips. Researchers at the Economic Policy Institute found that the change could cost tipped workers overall $5.8 billion a year. Study co-author Heidi Scherholtz says women would take 80% of the hit.
Tipped workers are going to see a huge hit to their take-home pay, and employers will be enriched. Because the vast majority of tipped workers are women, because women earn lower wages, they are far more disproportionately harmed by this rule.
The administration defends the change as a fairness issue, saying it will facilitate tip pooling, which would allow restaurants, for example, to take the waitstaff's tips and spread them around to the dishwashers and cooks. However, nothing in the rule stops employers from simply pocketing the tips as long as everyone makes at least minimum wage. The public comment period on regulations.gov ends February 5th. Scherholtz thinks the rule change would not end up helping non-tipped workers.
They're already paying those workers what they need to get workers in those jobs. And so if they do share any tips with workers in the back of the house, it will very likely be offset with declines in their base pay.
Scherholtz notes that the administration failed to conduct an economic analysis of this rule change, which is required by law. That could become the basis of a lawsuit to stop the change if the administration finalizes the rule. For Public News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
The National Weather Service has issued a high surf advisory for Friday through Saturday, when waves as high as 12 feet and dangerous rip currents are forecast. This high surf will be very dangerous, especially for inexperienced swimmers. Large waves could overtop jetties and rock formations, so avoid standing on these overlooks due to the potential to be swept away. There is also potential for minor coastal flooding and beach erosion during high tides. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Fistier.
Residents of San Diego County who suffered damage or losses from the recent Lilac Fire in December can now register for disaster assistance with the Federal Emergency Management Agency, or FEMA. To get started with the claim, visit disasterassistance.gov or call 1-800-621-FEMA, F-E-M-A. Disaster assistance for homeowners and renters may include grants to help pay for rental assistance, essential home repairs, uninsured and underinsured personal property losses, and other serious disaster-related needs not covered by insurance. FEMA grants do not have to be repaid. FEMA assistance is non-taxable and will not affect eligibility for Social Security, Medicaid, or other federal benefits. Low-interest disaster funds from the U.S. Small Business Administration are also available for businesses of all sizes, as well as for nonprofit organizations, homeowners, renters, and landlords. Disaster loans cover losses not fully compensated by insurance or other recoveries. Registering with FEMA is required for federal aid, even if a survivor has registered with another disaster relief organization, such as the American Red Cross. Survivors should register even if they have insurance. FEMA cannot duplicate insurance payments, but underinsured applicants may receive help after their claims have been settled. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Meridian Broaddus.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Paul Cruz with East County Magazine's Green Scene Report. A group of children from the inner-city San Diego neighborhood of City Heights traveled to Boulder Creek Preserve earlier this month to plant trees at a wildlife sanctuary near Descanso, owned by the San Diego River Park Foundation. The event was a partnership between the River Park Foundation and La Nuestra Generations, both nonprofit organizations. The 10 children learned the importance of protecting the environment while enjoying a day in nature. Sarah Humacker, Associate Director of the San Diego River Park Foundation, said the project offers youth a respite from the big city. "This is a great chance for underserved kids to get into the backcountry," she says. The trees planted were purchased with donations from the foundation's Give a Tree program, which allows donors to support the group's mission of protecting and restoring the San Diego River watershed. A day started with the introduction in the preserve from Education Coordinator Bob Forhun, who described wildlife that lives in the preserve. Images from a remote wildlife camera revealed that the site had recently been visited by a bobcat, coyote, and deer. The children then learned the proper way to plant the native tree species, which included oak, elderberry, and manzanita. Christopher Ewald is the director of La Maestra Generations, which provides free educational and creative arts programs to children. He said that the partnership with the San Diego River Park Foundation allows kids access to the serenity of nature, a rare opportunity for many of them. He shared the story of a pair of boys participating in the tree planting, a nurturing and peaceful experience. They've seen war, they've seen the Taliban, he said of the Jahar Marwad, two of the five brothers who immigrated to the United States with their parents from Afghanistan. Tim Penny, an educator with La Muestra Generations, was making his fifth field trip to Boulder Creek Preserve. He says these events, in addition to being fun, teach kids responsibility to their community. This program helps show the connection between what we do in our environment and how it impacts in nature, he said. Donations to the program can be made at sandiegoriver.org.
After 9 of 12 members of the National Park Service Advisory Board resigned this week, public land supporters are noticing what they say is a pattern of indifference from Secretary Ryan Zinke's Interior Department. In a resignation letter unveiled this week by the Washington Post, Board Chairman Tony Knowles said repeated requests to meet with Zinke have been ignored. He also expressed concern that stewardship and protection of national parks has been set aside. Phil Francis, chair of the Coalition to Protect America's National Parks, agrees and calls the agency's actions over the past year, from reducing the size of national monuments to opening up lands to energy development, discouraging.
I spent 41 years in the National Park Service trying to protect and preserve these natural and cultural resources for future generations. And many of the actions taken, in our view, are sort of an assault on our mission.
Interior spokesperson Heather Swift says the agency denies that it refused to meet with the board. The National Park Service Advisory Board was created in 1935 and designates National Historic or Natural Landmarks. The terms of most of the nine members who quit were set to expire in May. Recently, the advisory board has focused on climate change and how to encourage younger and more diverse visitors to national parks, but says these items aren't part of Interior's agenda. Francis calls the agenda's treatment of the board disrespectful. He says Interior is holding some hypocritical positions. For instance, the department has expressed concern for National Park's $11 billion maintenance backlog, even though it also supports a 13% budget cut to the Park Service.
It just seems like instead of being supportive of our national park and its values, which to me represent the really important places in our country's history and wonderful natural resources, just the opposite is happening.
Francis says he is hopeful people will stand up for national parks and that he gets emails from people every day expressing support for public lands. For Public News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 Descanso, serving San Diego and East County and streaming live worldwide on knsj.org.
We're on the road in East County, visiting some amazing towns and meeting some incredible people across our region. Welcome to another adventure on East County Magazine's On the Road.
This is Jonathan Goetz on the road in Ramona, California. The Ramona Heart Mural Project will soon be unveiling its 16th community mural. A dedication ceremony for the Hiking on Mount Woodson mural will be held on Saturday, January 27th, starting at 10 a.m. at the Ramona Fitness Center. The public is invited to attend. In addition to refreshments, attendees will receive a picture of the mural, autographed by the artist. At 12 feet by 70 feet, the expansive mural depicts Mount Woodson as a destination for hikers who travel from around the world to appreciate the incredible views and large boulders unique to this terrain. Many hikers make it a goal to reach the top so they can take photographs of themselves on potato chip rock, a thin outcrop resembling a potato chip that looks like it will break off at any moment. Depicted in his mural, Below Mount Woodson, artist Rick Erickson projects his vision of far-reaching vineyards that he foresees in the fast-growing winemaking industry in the Ramona Valley. Erickson has been painting murals professionally for over 25 years, including the Firehouse mural at Ramona's original fire station and at the Pioneer Store. As with all Ramona mural projects, viewers will be challenged to discover the heart icons in a Where's Waldo type exercise. The artist has painted 5 hidden hearts and 5 animals, some of them hidden in the Mount Woodson mural. The Ramona Heart Mural Project is a nonprofit organization. The acronym HEART stands for these qualities reflecting Ramona's unique character: H for historic and hiking, E for equine, A for arts, antiques, and agriculture, R for scenic rural vistas and drives, and T for tasting wines. The goal of the Ramona Heart Murals Project is to create a reason for those passing tourists to stop to enjoy Ramona's charm, character, and heritage. In addition to murals on the walls of buildings, the Heart Mural Project recently announced the Utility Box Project. Artists will be painting utility boxes throughout Ramona along Main Street beginning this spring. For more information about the Ramona Heart Mural Project, you can visit ramonamurals.com or take a drive to Ramona in the heart of East County's mountains to view the many impressive murals up close. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Goetz. This is Jonathan Goetz with an education report. San Diego State University is kicking off a new era of scientific and engineering collaboration with the new Engineering and Interdisciplinary Sciences Complex, which formally opened its doors to the community this week. The 85,000-square-foot, $90 million EIS complex is designed to encourage cooperative research. The complex features 17 lab spaces and research facilities, doubling the amount of existing learning space for engineering students. The building is home to a state-of-the-art fabrication studio with laser cutters, 3D printers, and milling machines, the Brain Imaging Center, which houses SDSU's first magnetic resonance imaging, or MRI machine, for researchers studying Alzheimer's disease and autism, as well as research spaces dedicated to exploring the next generation of renewable energy sources, medical devices, and wireless networks. The complex also provides space for student clubs and organizations, including the SDSU Rocket Project and an Aztec Baja Auto Racing Club. SDSU President Sally Rausch says the 120-year-old campus celebrates the insights and innovations that the new complex will inspire. The university also expects the new labs, classrooms, and innovative research programs with cutting-edge equipment will help recruit superstar faculty members, as well as top-tier undergraduate and graduate students. The constellation of scientific, engineering, and business acumen is also aimed at spurring new alliances with local, national, and international industry partners, said Stanley Malloy, Associate Vice President of Research and Innovation. Continuing its commitment to environmental stewardship, SDSU incorporated numerous green elements into the construction. The new building complex is expected to achieve LEED Silver certification by the U.S. Green Building Council in the coming months and will join a list of more than half a dozen buildings on SDSU's 288-acre campus that have achieved this distinction.
This is Meridian Broaddus with a public service announcement from the Grossmont Healthcare District. The district is seeking nominees for its 2018 Healthcare Heroes Awards. Now in its 12th year, the Healthcare Heroes Awards program recognizes volunteers who advance the delivery of quality health services in the East County region. Volunteers are a significant part of care teams in local health organizations, working alongside doctors, nurses, community health workers, neighborhood navigators, community paramedics, and pharmacists to address the community's medical and social needs. Nominees may include any individual volunteer or volunteers of organizations who demonstrate selfless dedication beyond their paid duties. Michael Emerson, Grossmont Healthcare District Board President, says the purpose of the Healthcare Heroes Awards is to recognize volunteers whose unsung work in healthcare might not otherwise be celebrated. We solicit the assistance of all East County residents in nominating their peers so we can recognize their commitment to care and inspire others, he adds. Some examples of volunteers eligible for nomination include healthcare educators, volunteer transportation providers, health professionals, first responders, community clinic volunteers, pastoral caregivers, grant writers, members of service clubs, members of policy or advocacy organizations, auxiliary members, and healthcare-related youth volunteers. Nominees from prior years are eligible to be nominated again if they were not previously selected. The 2017 winners included a camp counselor with a big and new heart thanks to a transplant, a woman who drives seniors to doctor appointments, an 83-year-old retired psychologist, a new U.S. citizen from Iraq, and a 17-year-old high school student. Deadline for submission of entries is 3 p.m. on Friday, March 9th. Entries can be submitted online through the GHD website at grossmonthealthcare.org or by clicking on Operations and Events or call 619-825-5050.
Welcome to Vines and Wines on the East County Magazine Show, bringing you news to savor about our region's fast-growing winemaking industry. This is Miriam Raftery with East County Magazine's Vines and Wines, a report just released by the San Diego County Vintners Association on the economic value of wineries in San Diego County shows that the burgeoning winemaking industry is having a potent effect. In 2016, the county's 116 wineries generated a regional impact of over $30 million and supported 697 local jobs. San Diego now ranks fifth statewide in total wine licenses, behind only Napa, Sonoma, San Luis Obispo, and Santa Barbara counties. Our region has surpassed Riverside County, home to Temecula's well-known wine region. From 2015 to 2016, wine sales in San Diego County grew by 88%. Wineries here generated nearly $24 million in gross sales in 2016, which generated $1.1 million in sales taxes for the county and nearly $1 million more in property taxes. The report looked at growth in wineries from 2010 through 2016 to assess the impacts of a landmark county winery ordinance passed in 2010 and amended in 2016, which eliminated the need for most wineries to obtain costly major use permits. During that time span, San Diego County's wine grape crop value has more than quadrupled to $4.2 million, while total acres of wine grapes harvested has more than doubled. Most local wineries are new, taking root in the last 3 years, although wine growing here dates back to Father Junipero Serra and the Spanish missionaries in the 1700s. Though growing fast, most local wineries remain small, with 57% producing less than 1,000 cases of wine in 2016 and just 13% of them producing over 2,500 cases. By contrast, in Temecula, 62% of the wineries there produced between 5,000 and 49,000 cases. Only 8% produced less than 1,000. San Diego County vintners are using over 45 different grape varietals to produce their wines, with an average of more than 8 per winery. The most popular grapes grown locally include these reds, Cabernet Sauvignon, Syrah, Sangiovese, Merlot, Cabernet Franc, Zinfandel, Malbec, and Petite Syrah. The most popular whites locally produced are Viognier and Sauvignon Blanc. While the outlook of wineries that participated in the survey here was positive overall, some cited potential impediments to attaining maximum potential. Asked to name their priority issues, wine growers cited permits and local regulation, followed by labor costs and groundwater runoff rules. One area where marketing could boost sales further is tourism. Winery owners who responded to the association's survey reported that 27% of their sales in 2016 were due to tourism. As far back as 2013, before most local wineries had even opened their doors, the San Diego Tourism Authority's visitor survey profile found that wine tasting ranked in the top 15 activities among all visitors to our region, after other popular activities such as theme parks, beaches, and sightseeing. Wineries are also popular with local residents who enjoy tasting or simply appreciate the economic boost that the wine industry is having on areas such as Ramona, a hub for wine enthusiasts. A whopping 94% of winery owners locally surveyed said that wine tourism and wineries are appreciated and publicly supported by residents. Only 3% believed industry tourism was unwelcome and actively opposed. That strong support is in contrast to most other wine regions nationally and statewide. For instance, a 2016 survey of annual wine conditions done by Silicon Valley Bank found only 40% of winery owners thought their industry was both appreciated and publicly supported by locals. San Diego's burgeoning wine business has no doubt benefited from the earlier boom in craft brewing, which has made San Diego a top market nationally for the craft beer brewing industry and shown the potent economic punch that such activity can ferment for our region.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show.
Welcome to Destination East County with your hosts, Valerie Watts
and Jonathan Getz, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week.
This week's Destination East County includes the award-winning Danny Green Trio at Mission Trails Golf, the Mousetrap at Lamplighters Theater in La Mesa, Hawkwatch in Ramona, Santee's 50-kilometer race and active lifestyle expo, author Diana Lindsay at local libraries, guitarist Jim Earp at San Pasqual Winery, and Coffee with La Mesa Conversations.
Plus, we'll have coming attractions, including Mean Mary in concert in Santee, a Laurel and Hardy film night in Spring Valley, a local author expo in El Cajon, the Oak Ridge Boys live at Sequan, a violin and cello concert at Mission Trails, San Diego Chamber Music Society musicians at the La Mesa Library, Seussical the Musical in Spring Valley, Stage 4 Jazz at the San Pasqual Winery's La Mesa Tasting Room, a star party at Mission Trails, and the Martin Luther King Jr. Choir's Ensemble performing in Lemon Grove.
So stay tuned for all of these events and many more.
Lamplighters Theater in La Mesa presents Agatha Christie's classic mystery, The Mousetrap, running from January 13th through February 4th. A terrible snowstorm traps a group of strangers in a quaint boarding house. To everyone's horror, it soon becomes clear that a murderer is hiding among them. This thrilling whodunit by Agatha Christie, author of so many classic English murder mysteries, is known for its unpredictable ending. Can you pinpoint the murderer before the characters do? The original production of The Mousetrap on London's West End has now been running continuously for 61 years, during which period it's been performed more than 25,000 times, making it the most popular whodunit of all time and the longest-running show of any type in the modern era. For tickets and details, visit lamplighterslamesa.com.
The Wildlife Research Institute invites you to Hawkwatch. Each Saturday in January and February at 10 a.m., visitors can see birds of prey such as hawks, eagles, and owls. Sponsored by the Wildlife Research Institute, this year Hawkwatch will not be held at the Institute's headquarters, but instead at Beegent Ranch, a private ranch open only for the Hawkwatch event. Guests are advised to arrive a half hour early for parking, bring binoculars, and enjoy some coffee and donuts before viewing the raptors that make their homes in the Ramona grasslands. For more information, you can visit wildlife-research.org.
Diana Lindsay, author of the new guidebook, Anza Borrego Desert Region, will be speaking and signing copies of her book at two upcoming appearances in East County. She'll be at the Julian Library on January 20th at 10:30 a.m., and the Rancho San Diego Library on January 23rd at 6:30 p.m.
Fingerstyle guitarist Jim Earp will perform at the San Pasqual Winery Tasting Room in La Mesa's downtown village on January 20th from 7 to 10 p.m. He'll be playing original music in a style that blends Hawaiian slack key with Celtic guitar, also singing popular folk rock favorites such as songs by Neil Young and James Taylor. Wine, cheese, and dessert are available for purchase in the winery's cozy back room. For more information, you can visit sanpasqualwinery.com.
The city of Santee will host a national 50-kilometer race walk championship on January 20th in conjunction with the Santee Active Lifestyle Expo aimed at promoting health and fitness. The expo will be held at the Trolley Square Shopping Center from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. with activities for kids and adults. Before the expo, spectators can watch The USA Track and Field National Championship race walk competition with Olympic caliber athletes walking faster than most people can run. The race will take place on Town Center Parkway and Riverview Drive from 7:30 a.m. to 2:30 p.m. The winner of the 50-kilometer race walk, that's over 31 miles, will receive an $8,000 prize. At the expo, a Kids Fit Fun Zone will feature a climbing wall, obstacle course, and giant fitness board game. BMX professionals will fly through the air on a half-pipe ramp. In addition, nearly 50 vendor booths will have samples, info, health, and wellness tips. Attendees wearing fitness attire and athletic shoes can try out a different fitness class every 30 minutes on the amphitheater stage. They can also run through the Extreme Fit obstacle course with more than 200 feet of inflatable obstacles and firefighter challenges. For more information and a list of the fitness classes, you can visit cityofsantee.gov.
You're invited to come join the La Mesa Conversations leadership and your neighbors at an O-Host Coffee on Saturday, January 20th from 9 a.m. to 10:15 at Lightbulb Coffee, La Mesa's newest coffee shop on La Mesa Boulevard. Everyone is welcome at this event to discuss upcoming events and panels on healthcare, homelessness, and education. La Mesa Conversations wants to hear from you and encourages you to join the conversation and bring friends and family.
Award-winning jazz pianist and composer Danny Green and his trio perform at the Mission Trails Golf Course on Thursday, January 25th. You're invited for dinner at 4:30 with a concert from 6:30 to 9:30 p.m. A rising force on the national jazz scene, San Diego native Danny Green has garnered multiple awards and has captured the attention of critics around the world. His work has been featured on Public Radio International, as well as music publications and major newspapers. Green's gifted composing has earned him 2 San Diego Music Awards for Best Jazz Album. Green's trio includes bass player Justin Grinnell and drummer Julian Cantelme. They have performed at prominent jazz clubs and festivals across the country and were featured artists at TEDx San Diego in October, performing with string players from the San Diego Symphony. For tickets and details, visit the Mission Trails Golf Course website at missiontrailsgc.com.
Now for a preview of coming attractions.
Saps at Sea, the local Laurel and Hardy fan club, present their 40th anniversary Saps Funtastical Gathering of Film and Food on January 27th at 7 p.m. at Trinity Presbyterian Church in Spring Valley. The Saps will present a Tex Avery cartoon. Then, Russ Peck will provide the live music score for the silent gem We Fall Down. The comedy comes fast and furious in Mixed Nuts when the guest comedians run rampant at a local girls' finishing school. The Saps will also give you a surprise look at some special events and guests coming as they start the 40th year off in a hilarious way.
The El Cajon Library will host its 3rd Local Authors Expo on Sunday, January 28th at 2 p.m., featuring presentations by 3 local authors and a reception afterwards where attendees may meet the authors, buy books, and enjoy refreshments. The authors featured include Wanjiru Warama, a La Mesa resident and author of Unexpected America, a memoir of her experience coming to America after growing up as the daughter of peasants on a farm in colonial Kenya. Carrie Thompson, a San Diego author of young adult fiction, also writes adult fiction under the pseudonym Callie Lanford. Roger Conley is a former reporter for the San Diego Evening Tribune. He's authored 7 historical novels, including his latest, Deep Water, a political thriller that takes place during the early days of the Cold War.
Mean Mary is in concert on February 2nd at 7 p.m. at the Summit Unitarian Universalist Fellowship at the Summit Unitarian Universalist Fellowship in Santee. The artist is an Americana, bluegrass, blues, and folk artist based in Nashville, stopping here on her blazing tour through Southern California. Mary read music before she could read words and was proficient on guitar, banjo, and fiddle by age 7, according to a bio provided by Summit. She is known for her lightning-fast fingers, haunting vocals, and intricate story songs. For details, visit summituuf.org.
The Oak Ridge Boys, who were recently inducted into the Country Music Hall of Fame, will perform on Saturday, February 3rd at 5 p.m. in Sequan's Live and Up Close Theater in El Cajon. Their four-part harmonies and upbeat songs have won many awards, including a Grammy, Country Music Association, and American Country Music Awards, and they're still going strong after more than 40 years. For tickets, you can visit sequan.com.
A violin and cello concert will be presented by Paviki Nichter and Cecilia Kim at Mission Trails Regional Park on Sunday, February 4th at 3 p.m. The complimentary concert will be held in the Visitor Center. For directions and details, visit mtrp.org.
Bruce and Beverly Dorsey with the San Diego Chamber Music Society will perform a concert with piano and horn at the La Mesa Library on February 10th at 1 p.m. The La Mesa Library hosts free concerts on the second Saturday each month, thanks to support from Friends of La Mesa Library.
San Pasquale Winery Tasting Room in La Mesa's downtown village will host live music by Stage 4 Jazz on February 17th at 7 p.m. Stage 4 is a dynamic group with a repertoire that spans jazz, rhythm and blues, and more. Learn more at sanpasqualewinery.com.
The Martin Luther King Jr. Community Choir of San Diego's Ensemble will be performing gospel and inspirational songs at the Lemon Grove Library on Saturday, February 17th at 2 p.m. The ensemble's music celebrates the history of Negro spirituals, aspiring to be inspirational and uplifting. For more information, you can visit the musical group's website at mlkccsd.org.
View the Andromeda Galaxy, the Orion Nebula, and other celestial sights during a star party at Mission Trails Regional Park on Saturday, February 17th, from 5:30 to 8:30 p.m. Amateur astronomer and trail guide George Varga will have a telescope available for viewing the night sky at the far end of the Kumeyaay Lake Campground's day-use parking lot. Learn more at mtrp.org.
Young Actors Theater will present Seussical the Musical at the Encore Theater in the Casa de Oro area of Spring Valley from February 22nd through March 4th. This musical production brings to life your favorite Dr. Seuss characters, from the Cat in the Hat to Horton the Elephant. For tickets, you can visit yatsandiego.org or call 619-670-1627.
That's all for this week.
If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or if you would like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website or the Destination East County show here on KNSJ Radio, you can contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is the most read feature on our website.
We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around, East County.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from our region.
Welcome to Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read. My name is Raina Menashe, and I'll be your host for this segment. Today I'm speaking with Joyce Strand, author of Hilltop Sunset, the first of a new series about a financial guru transitioning from executive to winemaker. My guest has written three previous mysteries on message, open meetings, and fair disclosure. She also writes and publishes a blog, Strand's Simply Tips, and she's a reporter for a regional wine magazine. Welcome, Joyce. It's a pleasure having you on Bookshelf.
Thank you so much, and also thank you so much for doing Bookshelf. It's awesome that local authors have a place where they can talk about their books, and I thank you for featuring me.
You're welcome. No one's ever said that on my show. I appreciate that. Okay, let's begin with your new series. Your protagonist, Bryn Bancroft, is a minor character from your three mysteries. Tell us about those mysteries and what made Bryn branch out into her own story in Hilltop Sunset. Give us some perspective.
Okay. Well, first of all, the first three mysteries featured Gillian Hillcrist as the protagonist. Gillian was a public relations executive at a Silicon Valley company, which has a familiar ring to it because, yes, indeed, that's what I did for almost 30 years.
What a coincidence, yes.
But at any rate, she encountered a variety of crimes in these three books, but always there and always present was her boss. And her boss was Bryn Bancroft, who was the chief financial officer at the company where Jillian worked. And as Jillian became more pulled into the mystery, so did Bryn. And so Bryn always had a role in helping Jillian solve the mysteries, mm-hmm. but she also, in the third book in particular, gets really involved as a victim as well. And so she was just crying out. She had her own personality, which we discover very early on in the first book when Bryn accidentally walks in on her and the CEO doing the baddie. And so we learn really quickly about Bryn's character, which evolves over those three books and then definitely morphs into a new character in Hilltop Sunset. But she absolutely is a character worthy of being a protagonist.
She demanded a book.
She demanded it, yes. Absolutely.
Well, I'm interested, now you said that you were a public relations executive. You worked in biotech and high-tech companies in Silicon Valley. But unlike Jillian, your protagonist from the first three mysteries, you never encountered murder, right?
Right.
So why murder?
True enough.
What is it that you enjoy about writing murder mysteries? And what's challenging about it?
Well, first of all, I think I started reading mysteries myself when I was a teenager,
mm-hmm.
maybe younger. I can't remember when I read my first Nancy Drew, but for sure, I have read mysteries all my life. Okay, I've read other stuff too, but mysteries are my favorite.
Yeah.
When it came time after my most recent layoff, which happens in Silicon Valley a lot, mm-hmm. I got to the point where it was difficult to find a job, and I was sitting around moping. My now late husband said, well, why don't you write a book? And I said, well, what do you mean write a book? And I'm thinking he wants me to write nonfiction, which is what I've done throughout my career, mm-hmm. Written various articles about biotech and high tech and whatever. But he says, nah, write a mystery. You read enough of them. And right. So that's literally how it got started. And then trying to figure out, well, what am I going to write? Okay, I've read a lot of mysteries, but how do I create a mystery? And so I looked around and I thought, well, I don't know. And I read a few newspapers because that's what you do when you're in public relations. Mm-hmm. You read a lot of publications. And I saw, my goodness, there's a lot of crime in California. So I figured, that's where I'm going to get my stories. All of my stories are pulled from real crimes that happened and have happened in Silicon Valley.
Really?
And in fact, some of the perpetrators are still in prison, doing time for their crime. But that was how I mm-hmm. evolved my plot, if you will, my story. Mm-hmm. Now, the challenge then becomes, well, you don't know anything about mysteries or solving murders or even what happens with
right.
the murder.
You're not a detective.
So I'm not a detective. So how do I make it credible? And I looked around and I found out that I had several friends among my list of friends who were policemen. And I also found a retired FBI agent who actually gave me the plot for Hilltop Sunset. He recommended it, and it was a case that he worked on. So that helped me. That challenge was met by reaching out mm-hmm. to real experts in the field who could help me make sure that my police procedure was credible. Example, I had a police officer, detective, show up in the first two books anyway, to help solve that mystery. Well, it turns out that in San Francisco, they don't call their detectives, they call them inspectors.
Yeah,
and they're one of the
detail.
Few.
Yeah.
And they're one of the, it's a minor detail, but it does add to the credibility.
Sure.
So,
can you tell us very briefly the real story of the crime that you based your new book on?
Oh, if I do that, it's a
It'll
spoiler.
Be a spoiler.
Yeah,
okay,
it's a spoiler.
Let's not have a spoiler. Okay, how about this? I know that you're a wine connoisseur. Your new book is set in California wine country, and you write for a wine magazine. Tell us what you love about California's wine and wine country, and how do you do your research for that?
Well, first of all, I'm not sure connoisseur is the right word. I certainly do drink a lot of wine. We'll
a wine lover.
Yes, I'm a wine lover, I guess. It's interesting. I grew up in a household that we probably didn't drink wine. In fact, I know we didn't drink wine, and more or less probably because it was too expensive. And I came from the East Coast and got married and moved to California. I moved to California at a time when the state wine industry was just beginning, particularly Napa and Sonoma, just beginning to be mm-hmm. Famous and well-regarded. So living in the San Francisco Bay Area at the time, that's the wine I drank. That's how I learned to drink wine, was Napa Sonoma. All of the names that are famous now were just coming along then. Well, then we moved to Ramona. And we moved to Ramona in 2007, just as Ramona was starting to do its wine industry. And so I watched and have participated and enjoyed watching the Ramona wineries grow. You know, there's now 26 tasting rooms in Ramona. I have to say that.
Or really?
My winery friends will get on me. And the wine is superb, and it's growing. The industry's growing. You can go out and taste at a beautiful setting. And so, yes, wine has become a part of my living, part of my life. And it is such fun to move out of the corporate environment, which is where Jillian Hillcrest was, and this is another reason I wanted Bryn, and move into the winemaking industry and start thinking about, well, how do you make wine? And yes, I do need to do research.
And you go to the wineries to
do
research.
I go to the wineries.
Fun.
I mean, I don't want to make a silly mistake like explaining why you would do stainless steel instead of oak barrels, which any novice might know. So, yes, I am, and I'm doing more research as we get into the Bryn books because she becomes more and more experienced with making wine.
It sounds like fun.
Oh, it is. Love it.
I know that you're currently working on the second Bryn Bancroft mystery, but you're also writing an historical novel about a judge in 1939 California. Give us a hint about which judge this is and what real-life event you're dramatizing for us.
Actually, I'm very excited about this. It's a book that I've been wanting to write ever since I started writing it, but because I set it in a 1939 Ventura, by the way, Ventura, okay, California, I needed to do a lot of research, and I spent a lot of time up in Ventura at their museum library doing research. I've read all newspapers, daily newspapers from 1939 to get a feel for that, mm-hmm, that time period. But it's based on a memoir of the grandfather of a friend of mine, and he brought it to me. And this was a judge. The memoir actually ended in 1942, although he became a Superior Court judge then and then continued on for another 20 mm-hmm years. And it's based on his life, but it is fictionalized. The cases that I pull in are some of his own that he actually did as a lawyer as opposed to a judge. He was very careful not to talk about his cases as a judge, as you can imagine. So it is based on his values. Some of the cases are from him, but it's a story about, a fictionalized story of one of his cases that involves a witness at his trial who is actually a 16-year-old precocious wannabe writer. And the two of them team up because this particular judge was very much into juvenile rehabilitation as opposed to juvenile punishment.
Interesting.
And so the values that are espoused for this particular mm-hmm judge, the fictional character, are the values of my friend's grandfather, but it's not really him.
Right.
But it was interesting to figure out how to write a book when you couldn't say that they had a cell phone to check on or an internet to,
very
to find
different
information.
Very so different.
But and a different kind of challenge.
Mm-hmm. So, but it inspired you. Well, Joyce, our time is up, but thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure. And again, thank you for doing this.
For more information on Joyce Strand and her work, please visit her website at joycestrand.com. Again, this is Raina Menashe, and you have been listening to East County Magazine's Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read.
This is Connie Beck with Ready, Set, Grow. I'm going to help you create healthy and beautiful gardens using less money, less hard work, and much more fun. I'd like to talk today about some plants you can plant to bring in hummingbirds. Everybody loves them. Nobody wants to fill those feeders. They get ants in them. They get bees in them. They get mold in them. And someday I'll convince my husband to quit putting sugar water in them and feeding them because there's enough in my yard to keep every hummingbird in East County quite happy for quite a while. So what do you want to put in your yard that will bring in the hummingbirds? My favorite plant is a cultivar of a native plant. It is called Galvezia firecracker. If you go to most nurseries nowadays, this plant has become so popular that you can get it. Just ask for firecracker, which is different than Russellia. It's a Galvezia, G-A-L-V-E-Z-I-A. This is a plant that gets to be about 4 feet tall, 4 feet wide, and it has red tubular flowers.
And that's the key, isn't it? Red tubular flowers. That's what brings in the hummingbirds. They love it. Can't stay away from them. This is a much more manageable and nice plant than the Cape honeysuckle with the big orange flowers and the plant that gets to be 15 feet tall and 20 feet wide and goes everywhere and is a big floppy mess. Try a firecracker and see what you think. You can grow it in the sun, in the shade, in part sun, in part shade, with a lot of water or with just a little bit of water, and it will be fine. I have a neighbor who grows it under pepper trees, and the gardeners come every week and prune them into little round balls, and they never really get to bloom, and those trees have suffered through that for the last few years without a single one of them dying. Now, that's what I would call an obliging plant. Another good plant that will bring in lots and lots of wildlife to your garden, and hummingbirds especially, is called California fuchsia. It's called Epilobium. Some of you may have known it in the past as Zauschneria. What a great name. So there's a good password for you, Zauschneria. Who's going to use a word like that for their password? Zauschnerias, or Epilobiums, California fuchsia, are a gray plant, and they have a bright orange-red tubular flower. Once again, great for hummingbirds, really keeps them happy. This is a plant that will actually spread slightly on its own and will get by even if something bad happens to the irrigation and nobody irrigates it for 6 weeks or 6 months. It won't die. It'll be fine. Anytime you go to a nursery, look around and look for the plants that have the red tubular flowers. That's the key to hummingbirds. Now, my friend Maureen Austin, who puts on the Sage and Songbirds Festival every year, says there's two kinds of wildlife-attracting plants out there. There's ice cream cones, which we're talking about now. These are the tubular-shaped flowers that the hummingbirds like. Or there's pizzas, and pizzas are the flat flowers, the daisy-type flowers, that you see butterflies landing on. If you think about butterfly bush, Buddleia, which brings in all sorts of cute little butterflies, it also is fragrant. It's known as summer lilac here, or butterfly bush. Then if you take a close look at those purple spikes that grow on that bring in the butterflies, you'll see a whole bunch of little bitty flowers. And that's what the butterflies are landing on. That's what they like. So that's a great one. Probably the best butterfly plant that you can come up with, though, is always going to be the butterfly weed, milkweed, Asclepias curassavica. It has orange and red flowers on it, and it just grows like a weed in your garden. Not invasive, just reseeds very effectively. You will know that you have succeeded when you see interesting looking green caterpillars all over the plant, eating every leaf. In my garden, I pick them off and I move them to another milkweed after they eat all the leaves off one. I don't try to fight them because they're going to turn into monarch butterflies. So my garden is full of monarch butterflies, which I consider to be flying flowers. So keep in mind, butterfly milkweed is a great plant to add to your garden repertoire.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.
This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Jonathan Getz, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, A.K. Jewell, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine radio show or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine radio show.